Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and we sure drank all these beers, and we're gonna redeem them for nickels. And you can't get there from here.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we are the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption.
And Nate pulled off the best intro Stephen King ever did.
That is that's right up there with the one for the nose.
The nose.
That was might have been. Oh man. And I'm starting with beer.
Fuck it. I'm starting with the beer as well.
So the guy's what's his name? Tim Robbins goes to jail in this book. And you know the wardens, there's several in the book, and they're mostly real assholes. They call all the shots. They're kinda like dictators. This beer is called Dictator Marlin. From Evil Twin Brewing, and it's a quadruple IPA that's 12% alcohol.
Like the fish?
No, like the cat that roams the brewery. It's like a Wayans Marlin.
Oh.
M-A-R. Which can't be, like, hygienic to have a fucking just cat roaming around where edible things are prepared.
It I'm allergic to that. Catches the bad yeast.
Yeah, because if there's one thing that yeast hates, it's pussy.
True.
Quadruple IPA because I'm getting hammer drunk because I took my son for his first haircut today. So it was like serving 20 years in federal prison. It was such an ordeal.
He still believes that the hair is cutting it is painful, or he will lose his strength like Samson.
Yes, he is an Old Testament Jew when it comes to haircuts.
I think the New Testament Jews also have the story of Samson.
I feel like the New Testament Jews is a great name for a band, but
they do mostly bar mitzvahs.
they perform at the Ark Experience.
They're at the Creationist Museum thing in Kansas or whatever the fuck it is.
Yep. So that was that. So I have to get drunk today. Nate, what are you drinking?
All right. Well, everybody already knows what happens in this. So. Tim Robbins, also known as Andy Dufresne, he escapes from prison. So it's almost like freedom wandering into the fog.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Or wandering into the fog, freedom edition, double IPA.
Like a rocket pop flavored one? It looks like red, white, and blue.
No, it's just an IPA. It's not a rocket pop.
This might be our most popular beer in terms of how many times it's been used.
Well, they have so many variations on them wandering into the fog.
But it's called freedom, and he does just like disappear. And nobody knows where he goes.
Into the shit fog.
Fits.
Yeah, shit fog is what happens after taco night here. So, this book came out. It was part of the collection Different Seasons, I believe, right? Which, like, every one of those stories became a movie. I'm just looking for the year. 1982, Different Seasons came out. Yeah, and three of the stories became films.
What are the other ones?
I was going to say, trivia question. Anyone want to guess what the other ones were?
The other ones I know are individual books. I don't know the collections.
So the short story, The Body, was the movie Stand By Me. Became the movie Stand By Me. And way less popular, Apt Pupil, which...
Don't know what that is.
It's a movie, I think, like, is it Ian McKellen is like an old Nazi? And then is it Brad Renfro is the kid? Man, I got every detail of that right. In 1980, Southern California, high school student Brad Renfro discovers fugitive Nazi war criminal Ian McKellen living in his neighborhood.
Wow, that is an eclectic group of stories for one collection.
and then that came out and it was a fucking bomb. And the fourth story, The Breathing Method, was never made into a film.
Well, you know, considering two of the four were massive, influential cultural milestones, it's pretty good.
And three out of four ain't bad, as Meatloaf initially said. So they were like, you might want to...
He was talking about how many sandwiches he ate. Yeah. He couldn't finish the fourth one.
These were six-foot heroes, yeah. Do you ever see the Key and Peele where it's... who the fuck? Who's the guy that sang Ghostbusters?
Ray Parker Jr.
Yeah, where it was like the other movie songs he made. Do you ever see this skit where it's like a TV... You know those creepy commercials where they're like, you know, for the price of one CD, you could have all these great songs. And it was his, like, here are the other songs I wrote for movies. and it's him just saying the titles of movies to like a beat, basically. And one of them is Apt Pupil. So it's like this is the worst movie for a Ray Parker Jr. song. So like Apt Pupil. Just, and there's a little boy there. What a Nazi or whatever the fuck he says. Look it up. It's a fantastic skit. So Rita Hayworth and I thought it was The Shawshank. It's just and Shawshank Redemption is the movie, but not as good. Tell us what you thought. See you next week.
Yeah.
It is very, very similar.
Yeah. And the movie is the only reason anyone knows how to pronounce Dufresne.
That and the Mitch Hedberg joke.
I don't know the Mitch Hedberg joke.
Oh, is it? You ever at a restaurant and you have to wait for a table, so they start calling people and they say, Dufresne, party of two. Dufresne, party of two. And they don't show up for a minute. They move on. Brooke, party of three. It's like, whoa, what happened to the Dufresnes? They are hungry and they are missing. It's a double whammy. Should be Brooke's search party of three. I think that's the mission. I don't know the second last name, but the first one is Dufresne. We need to find the Dufresnes. They are in the back of somebody's trunk right now.
Then yes, that is the other way.
Yes, Dufresne is a city in the Midwest. It certainly could be. So, Nate, I already forgot what happens, but you grew up closer there than we did, so that means you have to expand it.
A little bit closer. So, all right, this whole thing takes place in Maine, and as you know from the movie, there are like two main characters. There's Red, who narrates the whole thing. He's an inmate in Shawshank, and then one day a rich white guy, nerdy white guy, gets brought to the prison, and he's a banker who killed his wife and his wife's lover. Although, if you've also seen the movie, you know that, oh, wait, it probably actually didn't do that. But anyway, and he, when he's getting accustomed to prison and he finds that Red is the guy in prison that can get you stuff, he asks for a rock hammer, among other things. And this is where you find out how Andy had so much money in prison. Stephen King goes into an enormous amount of detail. Well, about, how you get stuff into prison.
Well, he really gives you the whole picture, Nate.
Yes.
How are you spelling Andy hole?
Yes.
So Andy had to boof it, and he brought in $500, which in 1947...
In singles.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was probably in low denominations at the time.
This is a time when they still sold rolls penny candy. He needed pennies.
You know, I don't think I ever would have put a bet on Nate saying the word boof.
We have corrupted him. This happened.
9 years in. Finally happened.
Not the education Nate wanted, but the education he deserved.
So so because the book or the short story or novella or whatever it's called is so similar to the movie, it was like, oh, I just remember the movie because I've seen it a bunch of times. I don't know what I would have thought exactly if I had never seen the movie. If I was just reading this, it would have been like, okay. But
did they have I haven't seen the movie in a long time, so I don't remember the finer points of it. But did they have as much of the prison rape in the movie?
Yeah, there's a theme of that. Okay. It's not as direct. There's not like a whole... I mean, I think he might actually call them the sisters in the movie. I don't remember that, but Andy does get raped in the movie. That clearly happens. You just don't... You see like the right before and the right after kind of thing. You know,
it's alluded.
It's not like Oz.
No.
They show penetration from Juno's dad.
Yeah.
So anyway, he gets to prison and then he asks to get a rock hammer. And at first Red is like, listen, I don't get murder weapons because like then I'll get in a ton of trouble. It's like, no, I just want to polish rocks because I'm a rock hound. Which is like, okay. And so you kind of, it's alluded to a little bit that, I need a polishing cloth, but it had a special word, a rock cloth. No, what was it called?
I think it was just called a polishing thing.
Well, something. And anyway, he's like, oh, I'm using the rock hammer to, like, pick up rocks in the yard when we're out, when we get our, like, 20 minutes outside. And I'm polishing them, and I find some precious, from some, you know, nice-looking stones, because there's nothing to fucking do here. I'm in prison. So it's like, okay, oh, yeah, and he also wants a poster. And it's like, oh, yeah, get me the full-size Rita Hayworth poster.
Because
she never says what it's for.
Because it's for getting my rocks off.
True. Sensing a theme.
Yeah, this is the most theme-filled Stephen King book.
And so after the first couple of years, Andy has managed to, like, make himself very useful to everybody in prison because he's basically an accountant and can do everybody's taxes. And he starts out the same way it does in the movie, which is he's working up on the roof. And the security guard's like, yeah, can you believe it? I inherited all this money, and I'm going to have to pay all this stuff in taxes. And Andy goes up to him, do you trust your wife? And he's like, you fucking piece of shit. What are you insinuating? He's like, no. I mean, you can gift her this money in tax-free, which...
I don't think that's true.
Is it true?
Because you have to still inherit it first.
Not if you self-incorporate it as a pass-through. I don't know, fucking know. Also, this was the 50s. Who the shit knows?
Seems like a wild tax loophole, but that's what most of taxes are.
Any loopholes that exist are pretty much so large sums of money can be excluded.
Well, yeah, it's like a Ben Franklin attitude we take toward taxes. You know, you take care of the pennies and the trillions take care of themselves. So tax us and let the billionaires' money just kind of like go skate by occasionally.
Yeah, you know, you have to use your corporate jet tax write-off for your personal use, but you can't get money for your having a kid.
Well, I'm sure because we are a topical news podcast. If you've been following the Epstein ridiculousness, that I forget which billionaire guy Epstein gave quote-unquote tax advice to, and he paid him $150 million.
Wow, that's some good advice.
And they'd be like, because he probably saved $2 billion in taxes.
Or he bought a kid.
Oh, no, that was part of it. That was like, you know, when you go to the bank and they like lollipops and pens you could take? And Epstein's tax advice. Like, you want to fuck this kid? That's fine. He's like, here's the waiting room. Pick a kid.
Allegedly.
That's fine. He's dead. I don't give a shit. Come after me, Jeff. So he goes, and it turns out he gives really good advice, and I'd like something for it. A beer, turns out. He's like, can we have beers? Because we're literally spreading tar on the roof. And this, it's like being inside Satan's anus. It's so hot.
Not in a cool way.
Not in the way you want to in jail.
And not with $500.
And the guy's like, you know what? If I could, say, get my $30,000 or whatever, I'll give you fucking shitheads a beer. And it turns, and he does. And they're like, wow, this is a crazy thing. Andy Dufresne is smart and had some balls and look at the great reward. And every guy for the rest of the time, they tried to pretend they were one of the 10 dudes that got the beer, apparently, because it was such a legend. But it turns out Andy Dufresne has some kicking knowledge, and that's going to be really helpful for him for the rest of the plot, which we've had many versions of this beer before. I don't know if we have this version. This is from Barrier Brewing. It's kicking knowledge, salted caramel. It's kind of gross, honestly. An IPA brewed with vanilla, coconut, lactose, sea salt, caramel, and dry hop and stuff. An I Am Milkshake IPA that is 8% or so alcohol. That is interesting. It honestly kind of tastes like cream soda.
I can see that.
Which is not a bad thing. I like cream soda. This beer, by the way, brought to us milk soda. Oh, yeah. Who doesn't like that horrible thing you just sent to me?
Oh, yeah. I sent it to Michael, but Nate, you didn't get to see it. It was a man filling his humidifier with milk to hold cookies over it.
Ew.
He has died from black mold poisoning, I'm sure by now. But, like,
but his bones are so strong.
I mean, it's just going to be yogurt in about 90 minutes. Like, it's not going to work for
That's why you got to breathe in the milk fumes quick.
I like one of the comments was, what race are you? Because I want to call you a slur. Good monster. But if you don't want to call us slurs, you can go to patreon.com/discordclub. Or you can call us anything for money, actually. We are like men in prison, desperate, and we will do a lot for the money you could fit inside of one's rectum. Go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub. You can support the podcast there. Vote in our book polls. Tell us what to read. Talk to us. Join us for live episodes when we do those. All sorts of other stuff. Or you can help us out by leaving us a 5-star review or leaving a comment. If you're listening on Spotify, write a comment about what was that most charming one, Nate? Did you approve it, by the way? The mustache ride comment somebody wrote?
Oh, no, I actually didn't. Wait, I forgot. I'll do that
please
right
do.
Now.
Yeah, that's important.
That's good for Mike's ego.
And my mustache. So, help the podcast out like that. So Andy Dufresne has kicking knowledge because he's an accountant back when the tax law was only 10,000 pages because it's the 1940s. And quickly, the movie does a really good job of showing this how, you know, it changes the details of the book, but...
It's basically like money laundering by the end of it.
Yes, but first he's like giving advice to people, and then he's like helping guys do their taxes or set up trusts for their children, and then all of a sudden he's helping just complete money laundering schemes run by the warden. It's one of the things. One of the main differences in the book is in the book there are multiple wardens.
Yeah, they burn through them.
The first two don't really matter so much. The third one does matter a little bit. He actually has more interactions with them. In the movie, it's just this one warden the whole time. And so Andy Dufresne kind of increases his influence or increases his status with the warden.
In the book, he just gets more books for the library that he runs in the prison.
He did that in the movie too, though.
Did he? I really don't remember the movie very well.
Yeah, that's actually almost like word for word in the movie. So in the book and in the movie, there is a library, quote unquote, for the inmates. And it's like, you know, 3 issues of Archie that have been shitted in, and he's like, this is not good. Can we get more books? So he starts writing to, I don't know, state senators or something like that. He's like, can you allocate funds for a library for the inmates? And he writes a letter a week, and they're just like, go fuck yourself, sincerely, everyone. And he keeps going until eventually he gets a check, and I forget what the amount was, but it's a few $100s, which bought a shit ton of books.
Not as much as he fit into his anus, though.
No. the Dewey Deucemol system is what you need.
What you really have to worry about when you have that much money in your ass is inflation.
You're hoping for deflation. You know, you're hoping it's not too much of a liquid asset.
Nate, do you know what inflation porn is?
Is it what economists watch?
No. It's a porn. It's always cartoons because it can't be done in real life. Of them inflating usually women like with a bicycle pump or an air pump of some kind until they get really, really big like a balloon. I'm not sure if exploding is part of it. That might depend on the individual, but it's a thing.
I remember reading in one of the Darwin Awards books about a guy who, like, guys who would put bicycle pumps in their ass.
Oh, I remember that guy, yeah.
And inflate it, and then one guy did, like, the pneumatic fucking air pump from the gas station. Died from it. Like, it's like internal bleeding.
Yeah, that would just make you die. Most of the people in this book from the same thing.
Right. Well, we'll get to the dedicated butt rape section of the book, I suppose. But just to finish the library story, he gets a check, and everyone's like, "Are you gonna fucking quit now? Like, are you happy? You got your check finally?" He's like, "No. Now I'm gonna write 2 letters a week," and he keeps doing this.
They have a lot of free time.
It's true. When they're not getting butt raped, yeah. Stephen King is very clear to say there's a lot of butt rape in jail. In case you didn't know that about jail. And if you thought old-timey jail was better, no.
It was not, no.
No. It was just all white guys butt-raping each other. That was the difference when people were like, back in the good old days.
There was one table of black guys that no one in the book interacted with.
Yeah, because Red is a white guy in this, even though he's Morgan Freeman.
He got red hair. That's why his name is Red. But he's still old and wise.
Because he's got sentenced for life for murdering his wife and...
Accidentally, someone else.
And like a child. He cuts the brake line on his wife's car to collect insurance money or something and ends up killing a bunch of people. In the movie, because of the racial element by having it as Morgan Freeman. It's like he got arrested for like a hold up, like burglarizing or something, and just got an incredibly harsh sentence for it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the book is the movie minus like the more poignant parts. You know, at some point, like another guy shows up.
Yeah, there's like one paragraph, among other things, there's like one paragraph in the book where it's like, oh yeah, an old timer that let him go and he only lasted a couple of months. And in the movie, it's actually a really sad scene where the old dude is like, I've been in prison since, you know, 1908, and now it's like the 60s, and now they're letting him out. And then, you know, he tries to, you know, he's like, just can't make it in the real world of, you know, rural Maine in the 60s. And so he hangs himself, and it's actually really sad. But, you know, they turned that into a really sad scene in the book. I mean, in the movie, even though in the book it was just kind of like this one tiny little paragraph.
That was Brooks, the guy who had the birds. I think he was Brooks in both. And they really, the movie just does it so much better with like, the images, like he hangs himself because he ends up in the shitty apartment that they rent as the ex-con, and he's bagging groceries, and he's like, I can't even go to the bathroom without asking permission, and he carves Brooks was here above the lintel or whatever the fuck it's called that he hangs himself from. So like much later in the book, someone else could see that, and they're like, oh shit, this is where, you know, and they can carve their name too. All that's added. So much. It's just such a better movie. Just watch the movie. I feel like someone should say that to us, Nate. Just
yeah, I know. Where have I heard that before, Jimmy?
A lot of people. A lot of people say that.
So another difference, I guess, in the movie, I don't think it actually like goes into that much, or I don't remember going to too much detail about the murder Andy Dufresne is.
I mean, they basically cover the same ground. It just ends differently.
But like in the book, one thing that I was like, oh yeah, Stephen King wrote this, is the narrator's like, he said he was innocent, and you could just tell looking at him, he was one of them innocent guys. Like, that's how Stephen King describes shit sometimes. You're like, oh, thanks, Steve. Yeah, I get it. One of those people that looks innocent. Yeah, of course.
Well, I mean, I guess if I was to defend it, which it doesn't need to be, but it would be, the whole thing is from Red's perspective, and he's a man who's been in prison for his entire life. He's like, yeah, that guy actually might be innocent.
Yeah, it's fair. But
so Stephen King would have written that no matter what the perspective was.
Yeah. Isn't that just kind of the way he looks like the kind of guy who knew how to eat a hoagie? Like, he just like says,
I mean, that like, is a particular kind of guy.
Who doesn't know how to eat a hoagie? It's not like he says no. He's,
guys,
if he had said,
I have to tell you this. I was with a friend of mine. We were sitting in the park. He had gotten, I'm going to, it wasn't a hoagie. It was a Subway sandwich, which is a hoagie when you don't use a stupid word like fucking hoagie, because we're not in Pittsburgh or whatever.
Hoagie is a great word.
He ate it sideways.
That
he held it like a harmonica and ate it from the side.
That is transgressive. I don't like it.
So there are people that don't know how to eat it.
I mean, at the end of the day, he consumed the hoagie.
Yeah, he did. But it was still wrong. I watched him do this and I said, what the fuck are you doing?
It's like, I'm eating my long sandwich. What do you think I'm doing?
You know what? I've seen a lot of shit. That haunts me.
Don't you do this? It's like corn on the cob. You nibble the lettuce all the way around. You eat the sandwich curtain.
I don't like the phrase middle. Sandwich curtain at
then
all.
You eat it sandwich, but you eat the belly.
That's where the vittles are.
All right, fine. Let me rephrase. If he said, he looks like the kind of guy who knows how to punish a hoagie, you know what that guy looks like.
Oh, yeah. But
looks like he boofs it.
Who are we really punishing, everybody.
Then? This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you.
Have gotten these spicy sauce.
Mr. Hoagie.
Oh, that chili aioli.
I hope they de-seeded those jalapenos.
All right, so then a new guy comes to the jail who very conveniently, I think his name is Tommy in the movie, and is he also Tommy in the book?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, Tommy. And Tommy's like, what are you in for? And he's like, I'm here just running the library. Here's your forms to get a GED. By the way, they say I killed my wife and her boyfriend in Maine. And he's like, that's funny. I know a guy who actually killed your wife and boyfriend in Maine or whatever the fuck. And he's like, holy shit.
There's only like 45 people there. So, I mean, you might know him.
But instead of, you know, contacting my lawyer, which is what you do, he's like, hey, warden, can you just like let me out of jail now?
And well, he asked warden, to have it investigated.
But like, is that...
You still don't go to the warden first.
No, you go to your lawyer. You need a lawyer to do it. You
his,
need
lawyer, to like, his lawyer died.
This is a man who knows how to write a fucking letter. Find a new lawyer. It's like, hi, I am in prison for a crime I didn't commit. The evidence is out here now.
And I still have $498.
Well, he God. They are really poopy by this point. Andy is also a man who is very much not like a jail convict guy. And he believes that he has earned the goodwill of the warden after doing so much work for him because he's a stupid, stupid bastard.
Right. Well, this also the warden is like a Bible thumper guy, this particular one.
Yeah.
You know, who's just like, oh, you know, he's like quoting like the fucking
which I think there was in the
City
in the
on the Hill speech and
the
shit.
The one in the movie was like that too, right?
I believe so. I believe he was a guy
performatively Jesus-y.
Yeah, and then like blowing guys in airport bathrooms.
Well,
you know, as they do sometimes.
So it's just like washing their feet.
Yeah, it kind of is. Sometimes it tastes the same. Depends on how long the flight was.
But in the book, they just throw Andy in the hole, and then. When he gets out, that guy has been transferred. Whereas in the movie, they just murder him and say he's just trying to escape.
Which is more dramatic and makes for better
movie. It is much more dramatic.
Which, yeah, and also makes the warden so much more ruthless. As opposed to the banality of the novel warden. He's just like, I will transfer him. I will fill out this form in triplicate so fucking fast. No one hit you. But yeah, that's like one of the, I mean, it's still not really a difference. It's just a detail that, you know, your English teacher might ask you to see if you actually read the book versus watched the movie.
Mm.
And Andy's like, I won't tell anybody. I won't say anything about, you know, the rampant crime you're running out of here by selling, you know, discount license plates or something. Like, well, I don't even know what their scheme was.
One was doing all of this like auto repair for everybody for, you know, all the state officials and everybody that works at the prison, they're just bringing their own cars to get fixed for free. I think that was the main one. Was there another scam?
The other one later on is that they had a kind of like a work release thing where the guys could be kind of pimped out.
Oh, yeah, the chain gang. Yeah.
Where they'd be like painting someone's house or something like that, or, you know, fixing a fence in the town. And they would have all sorts of schemes like competing with or like outbidding and then getting kickbacks from the union guys who are, you know, because it's a book that takes place during the 50s, all the union guys are mobbed up clearly. So they are like, that was the other scheme, I think. But yeah, so then the warden's a prick and then Andy's like, God damn it. And then somewhere around here, Andy has told Red, now Andy's been in there for 20 years at this point. And he's like, I have a plan. I have a life waiting for me outside of here. I have like a fake identity ready to go. My buddy, who would never cheat me, set it all up. I have a passport and a driver's license that's only vaguely expired from Idaho or whatever the fuck it is he has. That I'm gonna go become a guy named like Dandy Ufrain. It's like almost like what was the fake name? It's like John Smith. It was like a really generic name. Like Pete Seeger. I don't know what the fuck it was. Peter Stevens is the name. Peter Stevens. And I already like hid all my money under that name because it was the 30s when I got arrested. And then all of your money could literally just be like a checkbook and they could never trace it. And I did that. And I'm going to move to Mexico to a place that I'm not even going to try to pretend to know how to pronounce. But started with a Z. And I'm going to run a bed and breakfast there because jail made me gay. I'm going to have a bed and breakfast in Mexico, and it's going to be awesome, Red. And Red's like, all right, cool story, Andy. Keep making rock statues for me, please. Some guy over there that wants to buttfuck me. I got to go. And he was like, I remember that story later. That was kind of probably an important story. But this is only after Andy realizes that his chances of being freed legally are squashed that he like reveals this.
They're never going to let him go because he makes them too much money.
Doesn't kind of make sense, does it? Because we know, because we've seen the fucking movie, because the movie's 31 years old, he's been digging a tunnel for 20 years. He wasn't like holding on to the hope that they'd free him. And then he's like, well, now I got to escape. He's been planning to escape the whole time.
It's good to have a backup plan. Accountants always want you to diversify.
I have a low risk portfolio here of just money laundering. Jump in there. What else happens?
He escapes.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I forgot about that.
And it's exactly like it is in the movie. He's like, you know, they don't know where he is. Like, he's suddenly, you know, at morning roll call or whatever the hell, you know, they're like, oh, no, nobody here. There's nobody in here. And they search the cell and they can't find anything. He must be on the grounds. Find him. And he's still not on the grounds. And, you know, 20, you know, by 12 hours later, they still haven't found him. And then eventually the warden is like, this goddamn poster of Rita Hayworth.
Oh, it's a new poster by then.
Yeah.
Well, in the movie, it never changes. In the book, he's always updating the poster.
No, in the movie, it does change because it's Raquel Welch.
It's the Raquel Welch from like the 65 million BC movie. That's some good. That must have been great jacket material.
It's the same in the book.
No, in the book, it's Linda Ronstadt. Right.
They do get a Raquel Welch.
You have to say, Linda Ronstadt in the 70s was really hot. Go back now. She's like
something
old
to talk about.
Kind of dumpy looking.
That's Bonnie Raitt.
Same thing.
I'm pretty close.
Go back and look at Linda Ronstadt when she was like in the like early 70s, and she's like never wore a bra. She's cute.
It's not unusual.
I hate you so much.
Was that her?
Sandwich by Gore. She did the fucking like Feifel Goes West song.
Oh, of course, the Feifel Goes West. Like the her sequel like sequel to Feifel, like, is that we all know about?
No, what was it? She did one of those songs in the early 90s. It was her and like Peebo Bryson or something. Somewhere out there. What movie was that?
That was from the first Feifel. That was American Tail.
She did that. But she Blue Bayou was actually Blue a big Bayou, hit yeah. for her. It's
the only one I could name.
She did Poor Pitiful Me. She had a hit with that, which was a Warren Zevon song. She had a hit in the late 60s, Different Drum, which was with the band The Stone Ponies, I believe. I want to say like 1968 or something like that. Great kind of harpsichord sound in there. I don't know why I know all this about Linda Ronstadt, but she was cute. But the movie has the great line of the warden. It's like, this guy disappears like a fart in the wind. Which is a fart inside of a euphemism for farts.
And that movie was then updated in the Venom movie when he said, you can disappear like a turd in the wind. You're like, that doesn't make any sense.
That must be really windy. Like, it must be like 100 mile per hour winds for that to work.
It's a turd hurricane.
A turd,
which I think, which I'm pretty sure is a Def Leppard album.
Turd Hurricane is war.
Rock me like war. A turdicane.
It's Weird Al.
Yes, this is risque material. Weird
PG Al dark. 13.
I mean, disappearing like a shart in the wind is hard enough, but a whole turd, that's impressive.
It was a really stupid line.
But then the guy, you know, they're in Andy's window are these little rocks that he's been polishing all these years. And the warden throws it in his rage. And he's like, maybe you know Raquel Welch. He throws it at her and then they hear, it goes through the fucking poster. And they hear like the echoey sound of it. There's the tunnel there. And one thing that they added to the movie of many things, but for this particular scene is that one of Andy's jobs was polishing the warden's shoes. Do you remember this in the movie? That he would polish, and so on the day of his escape, he's like, I polished them, they're there, and the warden's like, I'll get them in the morning. Andy kept the polished shoes, and he put the shitty jail shoes, which doesn't make any sense, because Tim Robbins is like 7 feet tall.
Very tiny
and then
feet.
The, He's like
he falls over a lot.
But the warden guy, they open up the shoebox and then he realizes, like, oh, let me check all like the safe, and he sees the shoebox has the shitty old shoes and all the monies or whatever, the books, the ledgers are gone. So he's like walking, you know, when they're putting back the story, Red's like, you know, he wore those fucking polished shoes through to his cell that night. And he's like, well, how often do you look at a man's shoes anyway? You know, like, oh yeah, you see Tim Robinson in like the, I don't know, it's a flashback or whatever. He's like strutting wearing his fucking cool shoes.
And that is how you find out who's a foot guy and who isn't.
Whoa, hey, nice shoes. I don't know why I noticed. Those are going to be hell for your corns. But yeah, then he goes through and he climbs through the shit tunnel and he comes out, and the movie adds again more great dialogue. There's only Andy Dufresne can climb to a mile of shit and come out clean or something like that. I remember that bit of dialogue I don't remember anymore, but it's very dramatic. And then by the time they figure it all out, he's long gone. Like a turd in the wind.
Yeah. Those are famous for not sucking around.
I just feel like when there's a turd in the chamber and you have wind, everyone knows like where it is, what it is, who it is. It's like the worst thing to say, actually.
I'll send you guys the video later.
Yeah, a turd and some wind. They're like, well, there is no mystery left. Man, that's a recipe for sharding.
That's a misfire. So he escaped, and then eventually Red gets paroled after 30 or 40 years of being in prison. And he's like, what am I going to do? Maybe I'll go check out that place where Andy hid his fake ID so I can get into bars. And and he finds a note. He's like,
I heard they're raising the drinking age.
He finds a note in the box. And he's like, hey, I did it. Come on downtown to Mexico. And he's like, I've never been to Mexico. And then he does.
That will mean I jumped parole or whatever. And he's like, fuck it. I went back into the goddamn grocery. And the movie ends with, doesn't it end like the Red walking up and he sees Andy at the beach?
Yeah,
like,
that's so. Kind
of, they don't say anything, right? They just see each other.
They have a knowing nod, maybe.
Which is great. Again, the movie's better.
Yeah, it just fleshes out this novella.
But I think there's just so much other stuff. Like, they flesh out Red. Like, Red's throughout the whole book is like, oh, they just keep you in here long enough to make you an old shitty man, and then they let you go. That's not true. That's not. No, they often just keep you till you die. But
sometimes they let you go when you're old and shitty.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, like if you like tried to assassinate Gerald Ford, they'll let you go when you're old and shitty. But they, right? Didn't they let? Was that? Was her name Squeaky Frome? Didn't they let her out? Nate, I feel like you would know this. Who's the Manson person that tried to kill Gerald Ford?
I think I feel like she it was Squeaky did Frome. Get parole. I think she still is in prison. Same thing with the guy who
Squeaky
tried to kill who killed Robert F. Kennedy. He also
Sir Hans. That would be the CIA.
That's right. Yes, definitely.
That guy named the CIA.
They're famously still in prison
with vaccines.
Oh no,
Squeaky Frome was paroled fucking 16 years ago.
Okay, so holy I was shit. Thinking of a different person, a different Manson person, Manson woman who was up for parole recently, and she didn't get it.
Well, it's probably one of the ones in the Tate murders. Those people, they're not letting.
Didn't they keep Hinckley? Or did he get out eventually?
Was he the guy that did it to impress Jodie Foster?
I think so.
Did he try to kill
Reagan, or shot Reagan?
Shot Reagan. Patricia Krenwinkel. She might be the one that's. And Susan Atkins. Susan Atkins died there.
But she did make that diet before she went.
It's a jail diet, yeah. It's the opposite of jail, where they just give you, like, shitty bread.
It's just
like,
bread.
No bread. No, Atkins is no bread. Atkins is just eating, like, beef and cheese. And then you're just boofing something. You know, the turd in the wind there. Really, it's quite bad.
You reverse boof.
Poop.
You eat foob.
Anyway, yeah. What do you guys think?
I thought it was fine, but also I was just thinking of the movie the whole time.
It's impossible not to.
And then it was mostly the same. Yeah, absolutely impossible. They changed very little, except make it better.
Oh, I remember I was just saying about the parole thing. One of the things they added about Red is that in the movie, he goes up for parole, I don't know, about halfway through the movie, And they're like, do you feel rehabilitated? And he's like, I am rehabilitated. I feel great. I am ready to go back into society. And he like has this very peppy kind of thing. And then they're like, rejected. Fuck you.
He was black in the movie,
Well, yeah, of course. Like, he's trying to say the right things. I mean, that adds another dimension to the film. But then later, I forget the timing of it, if it's after...
It's when they finally free him.
Right. So it's after Andy has escaped, and he goes like, I don't even know what the fuck... What does rehabilitated mean? I don't even know. I don't even know what that means. I've been in here so long. I don't know what I could do or whatever. He's like, write whatever you want. I don't give a shit. And then they're like, that guy sounds ready to go out into the world.
Yeah.
But like... That ad, like, it just enriches his character. It gives us more of him and his arc as well. You know, like those kind of things that are added to the movie just really make it better. And like, they make the guards in the book kind of come and go, like they don't really matter. But I forget his name in the movie, but it's Clancy Brown plays the big burly guard throughout the movie. And then they add a little bit of epilogue for him when the warden kills himself right when he finds out Andy Dufresne escaped and he has all the fucking cooked books. There's a great line. It's like, I'd like to think the last thing that went through the warden's mind besides that bullet was how the fuck did Andy Dufresne fuck me like this or something, you know, something better than that. But that just, and again, they say that Clancy Brown, the big burly guard, broke down and cried when they arrested him. Like, there's like more, it's just more summation for everything, you know, like, The characters are tied up more neatly in the movie, which makes it better, which just makes it better fucking
subjectively
experience.
Objectively better. No one needs to read this story now that the movie exists.
It's like you look at a house and they're like, hey, you want to check out the blueprint? Just look at the blueprint and see like what it was like before we like added the tile to the bathroom. Wow, it's a really nice square room. It's going to be awesome when we add that tile. That's basically what it was.
Tie the room together.
Do you know the movie was a bomb? It did not make money initially.
I believe it.
Because it came out like the same time as like Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction and like these big blockbusters.
That's hard to go up against that.
But it is the kind of movie that I don't think you'd see these days. Because it doesn't have superheroes and it's not a fucking remake of old IP.
It probably got famous just by being shown on TV a lot.
Rentals.
Which is true for a lot of what we think of today as like the big giant classic movies, like Wizard of Oz, which didn't really do well in theaters, but was just shown on TV all the time, and then it became beloved.
I mean, it's now routinely considered one of the greatest movies of whatever period of time you want to talk about. All time, the 20th century, the 90s, whatever.
It was a nominee for Best Picture.
Yeah, but like, there's always like one or two nominees you're like, I never even fucking heard of that movie. Like the critics and the public don't always overlap in what they like. I mean, I think one of the nice things about the book and the movie is kind of it reminded me of what's that other one we just read of Stephen King's Life of Chuck. You know, like this message of or this story, this idea of like a person who maintains their dignity in a terrible position and outsmarts and. You know, it's like a nice universally appreciable story. Whereas Life of Chuck was more about like how people all have shit going on inside of them that you may not know is interesting. But I thought it was it's a nice book. It's a really great movie though. Delivers that message better.
So this was written because if it came out in 82, this was definitely during Stephen King's like cocaine years. And so you have to wonder. I mean, you could say the bones of the story were very good, but Stephen King could have maybe worked on it more than one draft and like made it better the first time instead of requiring a team of screenwriters to do it for him, you know?
Yeah, but the cocaine, you know, paid for those screenwriters.
He was already on to his fifth novel after this by the time he realized this was done.
Well, it was over a decade between book and movie.
It was the rights were published only a few years after the book came out. The rights were published in like 87 and the movie's from 94. So that's, you know, in terms of development, that's not exactly fast tracked, but that's not, you know, everything of Stephen King's was getting optioned and turned into stuff in the 80s. And he optioned for cocaine usually.
Yeah. He exercised that option thoroughly.
But what's the guy's name? Frank Darabont or something like that? Who's the guy that made the movie?
Darabont.
Who I don't know him from any. Did he do other things? What else did that guy do? He's a French guy, right? That sounds like a French name.
He did The Green Mile.
Oh, okay.
And The Mist.
Oh, God. Which one was that?
The Mist is the one where they're trapped in the grocery store while mist surrounds it and it's full of monsters that eat them.
Oh,
that sounds... It's known for its vigorously horrific, depressing ending.
Do they all die?
I don't even want to give it away if you haven't seen it.
Well, they find out
that... It's also a Stephen King
story. They all have to have sex with each other and then they die?
Yeah.
Or all the women realize, no, the mist, the one thing I'll miss most, my jahoobies. And they're like, no. And that's
such jahoobie.
Fun. It's just, there's no jahoobies. Okay, what else did he do? I don't think he really did. He worked on the script for The Blob and Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Yeah, that's, you know.
That's quite a journey, man. And The Fly 2, and he wrote a script for an unproduced sequel to Commando. So this is a guy that went from making 80s shit movies to this, like, classic film. Good for old Frank here, man. That's impressive.
It's the full arc.
Oh, God, The Majestic? That was a piece of shit. Did you see that movie? Nate, I know you
didn't.
No,
I think I did.
Wow.
Jim Carrey has amnesia and he thinks he's fucking Martin Landau's son.
Or maybe I didn't. That doesn't sound familiar.
It's like, it's one of those movies that you're like, this is trying too hard to warm my heart. It's too corny. I don't know. I think it's just one of those, Shawshank is one of those movies just like everything came together just right. Should you read the book? No. Watch the movie. Watch it twice.
No real reason to. Yeah. I mean, it was good, but you don't need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody get on that last story. From different seasons. What do you think it's about? The breathing method. I hope it's about Lamaze class that's haunted.
It's about Method Man's battle with asthma.
If you know what it's about, why don't you tell us what you thought? Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Holy shit, it talks about a lady and her breathing method about labor. Okay, and support I was so right. Oh my God, you got to read the summary. We got to read this story. This should be a patron exclusive. Follow us on the social medias or go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub to support the podcast. Or just leave us a review. That is also awesome.
Or go to Goodreads and something else. Can't remember what the other one was. Tell me.
Killing it. And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.